Welcome to the Training in Economic Discipleship based around 10 Biblical Principles of Kingdom Economics. This will be delivered with 30 podcasts or MP3s, beginning with a one-day or two-day consultation and finishing with a reporting back one day where you bring back your stories based on your evaluation. In Genesis 1, with the nature of God, the 3-in-1, he said, "Let us make." Genesis 1, we find that the very nature of God is a cooperating nature. The 3-in-1 live in perfect unity. This is expanded further in Jesus' teaching about his relationship with the Father. In the Gospel of John, we find Jesus saying, "I tell you the truth, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees the Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he does." Later in John 16, and the whole passage in John 16 really, but in verse 12, it says of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, he will not speak on his own. He will speak only what he hears, and he will tell you what is yet to come. He will bring glory to me by taking from what is mine and making it known to you. All that belongs to the Father is mine. That is why I said the Spirit will take from what is mine and make it known to you. So here we see from Genesis through to the death of Jesus, this unity of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, this cooperation, this working together. And this is the very foundation of our being as human beings, for we are made in His image. And as he seeks unity and cooperation with Father, Son, and Spirit, so we speak unity and cooperation with each other, beginning with the husband and wife relationship. And all those years we spent seeking to bring together a good unity in our marriage takes a lot of work, but this is central to our nature as the image of God. And then as the children come, and as the family expands, we seek unity. But more than that, we seek unity with our brothers and sisters as well. So the spirit of cooperation. And this is at the foundation of economic success. In the economic sphere, the cooperation between people is the basis for capital formation. And this also is the key that leads the poor to integrate into the macroeconomic systems, what we call the upper-level financial systems from the lower-level financial systems. And it's also the key for a harmonious city. And today there's discussion about harmonious cities. So let us look at cooperation as the basis for capital formation. What is interesting looking over the last 200 years of theology about economics is the recurrence of this theme of cooperative economics as against capitalism, which is based on competition, or Marxism, which is based on a bureaucracy seeking to impose a cooperative process on a nation. It's the economics of Jesus and his 12 disciples. They had a common purse. Whatever money came in went to the common purse. You may remember who the treasurer was, Judas Iscariot. So be careful when you select a treasurer. Europe was saved in the Middle Ages by communities of faith who formed based on the same practices as Jesus' 12 disciples, this idea of a cooperative community, and that became the basis of the Catholic orders that were the key to the salvation of Europe. So it begins in the usness of God, in the unity of God. He's a cooperative community. And then we've seen the Acts 2 community, the first church and their cooperative economic processes. And then it's been the basis of many Christian experiments across the centuries. In New Zealand, we've seen many Christian cooperatives form. And then we've looked over the last decades at the use of cooperatives as the basis for the uplift of the poor around the world. Capitalism provides a framework that enables cooperatives to function, and indeed the principle, not necessarily the specifics, but the principle of cooperatives works at many levels within cooperative boards, partnerships within capitalism, work teams in corporations. But as Christians, we want to focus on the dispersion of power from the multinationals to grassroots economic development. And so we're looking at cooperatives at the grassroots, Christian communities, Christian churches where wealth is shared, kingdom banks, microfinance processes, self-help groups. These are all based on this principle of cooperatives. It's a big movement globally. In New Zealand, despite the lack of publicity, because there's no daily market that shows on TV, the combined turnover of cooperatives was over 27 billion, about 21% of the country's gross domestic product. And these range from cooperatives of mobile phone retailers, which has 20 members, through to dairy cooperative, which is by far the country's largest commercial business with 11,000 farmer members, etc. So the cooperative and mutual business is important to understand within the society. Member-owned businesses whose shares are not traded on the stock exchange and to keep a low profile because any profits go back to the members of the cooperative. Now, there's complex issues as well as simple processes. There's a crucial issue in the early formation, and it's easier to develop a cooperative in a close-knit community because the critical thing is trust between the early members in a cooperative. Let me give you a definition of a cooperative. It's an organization that's owned by and democratically operated for the benefit of those using its services. And it can be for any business operation provided for in the rules of the cooperative. It may be in the provision of goods or services, so production cooperative or a marketing cooperative, or for the supply of goods or services to others. So here are the principles. First, the members own the cooperative, and they share equally in control of the cooperative, meeting at regular intervals to review detailed reports and elect directors from among themselves. Secondly, there's an open membership. Anyone who wants to become a member can do so. Some cooperatives target specific populations. Thirdly, there's democratic control. Members control the cooperative by electing its board of directors. Fourthly, there are ownership rebates. So whatever is earned in profit is returned to the members in proportion to the amount of business that they do with the cooperative. Fifthly, there's a continuing cooperative educational process, a duty to educate members and the public in general about cooperative forms of business as a unique and valuable part of the private enterprise system. Then there's cooperation among cooperatives. They work together. And lastly, there's a concern for the community. While the cooperative focuses on the members' needs, co-ops work for the sustainable development of their communities through policies approved by their members. The global structure of cooperatives, which is a legal entity as against the principle of cooperatives, the global structure began in Lancashire and Rochdale in the 1840s. And so we talk of the Rochdale principles or Rochdale principles behind cooperatives. And those are the principles that I just mentioned to you before. Then it began to spread from England around the world. One of the most successful cooperative ventures is in Mondragon in Spain, beginning in 1956, which has drawn in many thousands. A little known fact is that in the USA, which is known for free markets, cooperatives provide 500,000 jobs, with the six largest cooperative sectors counting 21,367 co-ops, with 130 million members, or 43% of all Americans. So the principle in here is a principle of diffusion of power. This is a principle that multiplication of small religious, economic, social, and political entities at the grassroots diffuses power and enables leadership formation. So the whole principle of cooperation at the grassroots level of society provides for the development of leadership at those grassroots. This is in the scriptures. When the Israelites wanted a king, Samuel the prophet sensed that it was the wrong thing, that the king would centralize power and then begin to oppress and exploit the people. And Jesus, when he came, essentially he pushed power back down to the lowest of the people. The disciples were from among the people, and they did not centralize power. They kept pushing power down in the formation of new communities of faith. And so when you are building new churches or putting together new economic groups or new schools among the poor, any kind of cooperative venture, you're actually facilitating the emergence of leadership, and this strengthens democracy. This leads us to the next topic, which is the topic of capital formation, or how the poor escape poverty. The question when we're together in the slums is not what can the rich do for the poor, but the question is how do the poor themselves escape poverty? And if they've found ways to do this, how do the middle class and the rich Christians assist them in the processes that they know work? And there are seven main answers that may surprise you. First is conversion and discipleship into communities or church growth. Second is migration. The best way to escape poverty is to migrate to a place where there is work. Thirdly, education, and particularly vocational education, but any form of education may enable people to move across the barrier to the middle class employment context. The fourth is what we want to concentrate on, which is cooperative capital formation. The fifth is land rights, and being able to obtain your own home so that you have a certain economic independence, and this becomes the basis for capital formation. And then health care. If you don't have your health, it's difficult to work hard to make money. We could restate these as formation of capital. First, spiritual capital. Second, relocation to contexts of capital. Thirdly, skills capital. Fourthly, economic capital formation or financial capital formation, which is what we normally think of when we speak of capital. Fifthly, collective political capital, and lastly, capitalizing land as a basis of then having assets against which you can get capital for expansion of business. And the healthcare can perhaps be restated as health capital that undergirds the ability to do these. Religious life is crucial. Multiplication of churches, Christian communities, is a basis of creation of power centers that in many countries are the only context that it can oppose oppression. Churches are central in the creation of a new motivated lifestyles, social communities and networks, and the formation of economic capital through forming cooperatives. They are significant in the formation of leadership that can enter into the social and political arenas. The teaching of the church on God as a cooperative being, its training in the character of working in unity, its teaching on the 10 economic principles in this study, these courses, its teaching on seeking justice and opposing injustice, these all lay a basis for the structural development of economic capital. The gospel results in capital formation, slowly at first. There is a phrase in missiology, the study of missions, called redemption and lift. Where a people get converted, they will, within the space of a generation, move up economically because of the impact of conversion on the moral character of the community. So over one or two generations, those poor who are converted, discipled, and formed into churches, rise up economically because of motivation, perfectionism, hard work, and